So moving then to the Riddell era, which is when things start to get moving again, when part of his sort of strategic plan for the college is to boost the conservatory and the School of Art. Now, with the School of Art, he makes a bold move and hires a 24-year-old artist by the name of Ken Lougheed to be the director of the School of Art. This is after Kenderdine had passed away. And Ken Lougheed had won some prizes. He was a fairly well-known name, but still very young, not what you'd call an established artist. And then in 1952, Lougheed hired Art McKay, who was the same age as Lougheed. They had very few students at first, but to Riddell's credit, he was not discouraged. He said, just keep at it. You know, we have a long-term plan here. Then Douglas Morton arrived, hired by Lougheed. That was in 1956. And Ronald Bloor, in 1958, was appointed director of the gallery, the Mackenzie Gallery. He was 33. He was the oldest at 33. And then rounding out the group was Ted Godwin, who arrived in 1958, age 26. Here he's preparing a scroll in honor of Riddell when he retired, which I thought was a fitting image to show. So as this School of Art starts to hire faculty, the Mackenzie Gallery is constructed in 1953 at a cost of $68,000. George Barr, who was one of the campaigners in Regina for a full university degree program, called it, quote, a lean-to faced with stucco, which is a blot on the landscape. Then in 1957, the rest of the Mackenzie estate became available, $120,000. And an extension was built to the gallery, which improved it quite a bit. And now what's going to be called the Regina Five, they had a decent place to work, proper place for exhibitions. It was registered for national exhibitions that were coming through because it had a decent space for that. Now, as I mentioned, in the early days, the way Art McKay put it, he said that the Regina art scene was dominated by a few hobby Sunday painters. Most of them didn't like us, he recalled. In 1960, Bloor mounted an exhibit of the work of a brilliant but underappreciated sculptor by the name of Wynne Hedor. She didn't show up for the opening night. So Bloor read a letter saying that, in which she explained that she was not able to attend because she did not want to be subjected to the vilifications and personal attacks of hostile critics. So the exhibition, this is one piece from the exhibition. Another piece was called The Huckster, and it was an old auto crankshaft surmounted by a brake pedal and the Chevrolet nameplate jutting out of the mouth. Another was called Pale. It was described in the catalog as a straightforward, realistic study, a concentration of simple, basic form. Priced at $175, it was, to be exact, a pail. Now, the reception to the exhibition was mixed. Some of the visitors thought it was junk, modern art at its worst. Others thought it was quite intriguing. There was one piece called Dead Calf, which was a mangled automobile grill, and one of the visitors said, that looks just exactly like a dead calf. It's my idea of a dead calf. So a few days later, Bloor revealed that there was no such person as Wynne Hedor, that the name was a composite of Godwin, Lougheed, and Bloor, And the pieces had been assembled from a junk heap at the back of the gallery, because at that time, behind the Mackenzie Gallery, there was a provincial vehicle garage, and they threw all the discarded parts into a heap to one side. So the three of them just put together some things and put labels on them, and that was the modern art that they had created. And it just caused a furor in the city. Like, people felt very angry that they had been tricked in this fashion, and there were calls for the dismissal of Ronald Bloor as the director of the Mackenzie Gallery. But the Minister of Education, Alan Blakeney, stood up for him and said, well, I'm not going to interfere with that at all. And as you can see here, even Time magazine ran a story on the bogus exhibit. But he was trying to make a point about being critical and thinking about what you're looking at. And, you know, what is modern art? What is art? Lockheed started the Emma Lake workshops, and these were two-week sessions in the summer where they invited prominent artists from outside the province to give workshops. Jack Shadbolt gave the first one in 1955. In 1959, Barnett Newman conducted the Emma Lake workshop. His March 1959 exhibition in New York had met with critical acclaim. One of the foremost abstract expressionists of his day. So, and he has a very big reputation even to this day. On viewing one of Art MacKay's canvases, Art MacKay was at that workshop. He looked at the canvas and he said, "That's a really good painting, Art. Is that all you want to do?" And for MacKay, this comment confirmed an intuition that he had, that he was just decorating surfaces. And so with new energy, new inspiration, he quickly made over 100 works, 30 of which he kept. And according to Anne Campbell, who writes about Art MacKay, while many artists were painting what they could see outside of themselves, MacKay was painting what was trying to escape from within. The result was extraordinary non-representational artwork informed by the organic qualities of the North. So in 1961, in May, Bloor organized the show at Mackenzie. And Richard Simmons from the National Gallery in Ottawa said he wanted it. So it showed in Ottawa at the National Gallery on the 30th of November, 1961. And the reviewers lavished praise on it. It was hailed as one of the most significant shows of contemporary Canadian art. Clement Greenberg, who was a very influential New York critic, came to Regina in 1962. He visited the Regina Five, and he wrote, "The specialness of art in Regina consists most of all in a state of mind, of awareness and ambition on the part of five abstract painters who live there, and whose activity is centered on the Norman Mackenzie Art Gallery, of which one of them is director. I find something wonderful going on in Regina art." And he ranked MacKay with Jack Bush and Paul-Émile Bourdois among Canadian abstract painters. Now, art professor Theodore Heinrich asked the question, why did art flourish in Regina at this time? And he says, "Credit must go to the individual artists, but it is necessary also to salute the unusual town that somehow made it all possible." When Minoru Yamasaki came to Regina in 1961 to plan the campus and to design the first three buildings, the building we're in now, for example, he said, "When I got off the plane in Regina, all I saw was the thin, straight line of the horizon, that and the color of the sky, nothing else. Then I met all these vibrant, audacious people, from ministers and officials to educationists to artists, who believed in the creation of a haven of beauty and enlightenment on the flat prairies. I was caught up by their enthusiasm. I wanted to help." So these outsiders, Theodor Heinrich, Minoru Yamasaki, Clement Greenberg, they're all coming to Regina in the early 60s, and they're testifying to something special and interesting that's going on here. I think you could look at it as a sense of possibility, a sense of new beginnings. When Woodrow Lloyd laid the cornerstone for Regina campus in 1963, he said, something different can be done here, something different and worthwhile and needed. The faculty came up with the Regina Beach Statement at Regina Beach in December 1963, which was their philosophy of education, and they said that they did not want a university that just handed down tradition. That was important, but the university had to be also a kind of intellectual slum clearance, a breaking up of those conventional myths that are frequently identified with reality. The Regina Five show at the National Gallery was November 1961, the same month that Medicare legislation was introduced in the provincial legislature, when Saskatchewan was breaking new ground in social policy. So I don't think all these things are just coincidence. I think in a way the community was feeding the artist as much as the artists were feeding the community, nourishing each other and getting inspiration from each other. It's as though the Regina Five captured the spirit of innovation and adventure that was in the air, the sense of new possibilities, and that enabled them to do something interesting and something that met with critical acclaim. The other part that I would insist on would be the role of infrastructure. The fact that there was this school of art, there was a building, there was a gallery, there was support for these artists, even when, like they said, they didn't have hardly any students at the beginning or anybody interested in what they were doing. And I think Riddell is the person who is chiefly responsible for providing that support. Basically money, buildings, salaries, a space to work, and confidence, giving people a chance so that they can develop what potential they have. And finally, the last point that I would make on that issue is the fact that these people were not insular. Like, they were not saying, well, we on the prairies, we're so special, we just do our own thing and it's wonderful. They brought in the best from the outside world. They brought in Barnett Newman. They brought in Clement Greenberg to comment on what they were doing. They brought in the top people from New York. And they were aware of what was going on outside of Saskatchewan, but then they brought to that their own sensibility, their own sense of adventure. So in 1961, Riddell tried to secure the approval for a Bachelor of Fine Arts program at the Regina campus. At this time, Saskatoon did not offer a Bachelor of Fine Arts. And Riddell argued that because of our history, because of our tradition, because of our strength in the past, we should have a Bachelor of Fine Arts program. However, it was not approved until 1969, although it was eventually approved. And so that tradition of the fine arts continued into what is now the Faculty of Fine Arts. So I guess in summarizing what I've had to say, first of all, the interaction between the community and the artist. Sometimes the artist helps the community, and sometimes the community helps the artist. And secondly, that the Faculty of Fine Arts that we have today is rooted in history. It's rooted in a distinguished history, a remarkable past. And it's an important part, therefore, of the identity and character of the University of Regina. Thank you.